Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Globally Speaking podcast. My name is Paul Filkin. I'm a Senior Customer Enablement Director for RWS, working mainly with the Trados teams. And today I'm going to be your host. In today's episode, I've got the pleasure of speaking to Anarita Debonis, who's a software accessibility specialist and trainer for the visually impaired. Anarita and myself have been involved in an initiative over the last year or so to, to enhance the accessibility of Trados Studio. This project is really a very significant collaboration with the RWS Foundation, and it aligns really well with their mission to break down language barriers and foster global understanding. And the end goal being that we want to empower blind translators so that they can become self-sufficient and economically independent through the use of our translation software, Trados Studio. And in particular, in this case, it will be from Trados Studio 2024, which is very timely because at the time of this recording, we will be releasing this week. So, Anarita, it's great to have you with us. I've had the privilege of being able to work with you very closely over the last 12 months, but I also know that your journey started a lot longer ago. So let's start the conversation off by talking a little bit about what drew you into the world of translation and why accessibility became such a focus for you. It has been quite some journey, I think.
Yeah, hello everyone, and thank you, Paul, to give me this opportunity. I've been studying translation since my university career. So I have a master's degree in translation and interpreting. So I was facing with accessibility issues since when I decided to have this career, because at my university I have this course about translation and localization, and of course, we had the opportunity to learn how to use Trados Studio. And for me, it was a big challenge because it was not accessible. So I could just learn it with the help of my teacher, Fiorenza Mileto. And then I decided that I wanted to try to do something to make it accessible for blind translators as well, because I am a blind translator. I wrote my thesis, my master's degree thesis with Fiorenza Mileto, and it was more than 10 years ago. And then I indeed I stopped thinking of it, not really thinking, but I stopped trying doing something about this topic because of other commitments. And but I never lost Fiorenza and me, we never lost our hope. And then in 2021, I had the opportunity to make an internship in the Council of the European Union, in the Italian Translation Unit. And of course, I was facing the same challenge because in the European institution, Trados is used to. So I couldn't really translate documents with Trados I've just translated some documents by using Word. After that, I said to myself that I had to really to do something. And then I had the opportunity to participate to a selection for a PhD, and I'm currently at my third year. So yeah, I presented this project focusing on the accessibility of Trado Studio, and that's it.
So there's quite a lot to unpack there, Anarita, I have to say. So if I just wind back a little bit, so
yeah,
if we think about when you first started to begin this journey as a translator, so when you first went to university, were your early experiences of working with software in general, were these an issue? Did you find that working with all software is completely inaccessible, or was it only when you hit university and started using a CAD tool that you came across these sort of problems? Was this unusual to you?
I've been facing accessibility issues since before university, but I've never thought that even for translation would be I would have a problem, because of course I didn't know that, for example, CAD tools were not accessible, because it's not just a Trados issue, but in general, CAD tools are not so accessible. It was such a big surprise, indeed.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting that you associated a translation tool as being something that might be accessible, when other types of software that we're using might not be, like Word and PowerPoint and things like that. Which is actually a very positive attitude. So I'm really curious how did you come to that? What was it that made you think that Trados, or not even Trados Studio, what is it that made you think a CAD tool would be accessible where other types of software was not?
Because a CAD tool is a completely, let's say, visual software.
So you just naturally assume that the software will be written in a way that made it easy to deal with those visual aspects of working with software.
Yeah. So, for example, the screen reader has to provide information that are crucial, and it depends on how the screen reader gives feedbacks to the user. So, for example, I don't know, even when I was learning with Fiorenza Mileto, she was referring to many symbols in Trados. But of course, these symbols don't say anything, don't say nothing to us, so to a blind user. So the screen reader has to give feedback, but if it is not designed to give feedback or to interpret information, the screen reader can't give the user the feedback and information needed.
How was the university able to help you get through the course with software that was so difficult to use?
Fiorenza was really, really nice and positive. I was surfing on the net, and I found an article written by Fiorenza about this topic. So I said, okay, she's sensitive to this topic. So let's try to go to her and let's see if there is a solution for this. I was learning Trados in theory. And then for the practice, I was assisted by Fiorenza and by my colleagues. And for example, I was telling them, please press this button rather than that other one. So I completely knew the how to use the software. Just that I couldn't do it on my own. So yeah, it was a team work.
Team effort.
Fiorenza
has definitely featured over the years because we've been in contact. I can't think of a year that's gone by where she hasn't been trying to drive forward the progress of making Trotter Studio more accessible. So she's definitely been a very big part of this.
Yeah.
So I'm curious again now. So after you finished your degree and you moved and you started and doing some work, you worked with Views International, UGI. And how did those experiences in working with a company, particularly after going through university and realizing how difficult it was to use the software, how did those experiences make you decide that you wanted to become a real champion for digital accessibility?
For me, I decided to work for Youth International and UGI. I mean, to volunteer, indeed, not really, it was not really a job, but I was a volunteer. I decided to do it because I wanted to do something for something useful for the blind community. And I was thinking that maybe if I couldn't be a translator, I could do something useful for other people. So, and it was even this volunteering work was something challenging because, for example, sometimes I had to face with some inaccessible websites. For example, with Viz International, we were working with the Erasmus Plus program, and I had to face with some difficulties in the websites of the European institutions. So, or for example, in UGI, that is the Italian Blind Union. For example, they were writing letters and sending to people, to blind people, but they were printing the letters. So let's say our world, our community, we sometimes have some accessibility issues and challenges.
I can definitely relate to the difficulties in that. I mean, as I've been working with you over the last 12 months, and I've been trying hard to try to make sure that all the correspondence between us, I make sure it's as accessible as I can. And it does take time. It's a lot of effort trying to get it right. And I have to say, the timing of all of this stuff for me personally, with the advent of AI and ChatGPT and things like this, has been really significant because that technology is becoming so useful in trying to improve the way things can be made accessible for users. So me as a sighted user, I can take images and things that I'm preparing in documents and things like that, give it a bit of context, provide the image, and ChatGPT can give me really quickly very concise alt text and that sort of information that I can put in the document to make it easier to read. All of that really is what pushed you towards wanting to focus on digital accessibility as more and more of a career, and that brings me on to your PhD really. So why was it that you focused on Trados particularly for your PhD rather than a more general digital accessibility study?
Because as I previously mentioned, I have a master's degree in translation and interpreting, and of course translation and interpreting was really what I wanted to do since when I was a child.
That's really interesting. It sounds as though it's been like a deliberate career path where you've said, okay, if I can't become a translator, professional translator, because I have to be able to use CAT tools and the CAT tools are not accessible yet, then I'm going to make them accessible first. So you focused the first part of your career on trying to make sure they were accessible, and then when they're accessible, you'll be able to come back and be and become a professional translator. That's really that's really, really interesting. I like the fact that you've sort of created your career path as you've been going along, which is really, it's really cool. So let's move on a little bit and just talk about Trotters. So I've been working with the Trotters teams for almost 20 years now, and knowing a little bit about the legacy and the complexity of Trotters as a tool. When you started this whole project, were you optimistic about the fact that we might be able to make it accessible? And what was that like for you? And how's it been working with the development team once you get started? So sort of two questions there.
When Fiorenza contacted me and in 2021 and told me that RWS was interested in accessibility and maybe we would have the opportunity to make this project come true, I immediately took the opportunity and applied for the PhD. So yes, I was to reply to your question, I was optimistic till the very beginning, but of course I also know that there are lots of issues to face with, but I think that it's possible. And we already have a demonstration. So since when I started to work with the development team, they were so engaged and they were solving issues and searching for solutions. So I think, I'm very optimistic about that it can be really full accessible.
And perhaps you could dive a little bit deeper into the specific challenges that blind translators typically encounter with software and CAT tools in particular.
For example, when in the 22 version, for example, there were lots of issues because I was not able, for example, to create a project independently. Because, for example, it was not possible to add the target language, or it was not possible to add a translation memory. But apart from this, it was nothing in the editor was read by the screen reader, because it was not possible to read the source text, neither the target text. It was like when I was opening the editor, what I was reading was blank. Now we are testing the beta versions, and many progress have been made, for example, not only in the editor, but I think that the biggest progress have been made in the editor, because now it's possible to read in the editor the source text, so the number of segments, the status of segments, and other information, and of course, the development team is still working hard on the editor, and as soon as possible, other features will be available.
So I just wanted to go back a bit, because as we get into this, I'm conscious that we're using a lot of terminology here, and not everybody listening will know what these sorts of things are. So maybe we should just quickly explain a little bit. So can you explain a little bit what a screen reader is, and the sort of tooling that you use when you're translating along with a screen reader, for example?
Yeah, a screen reader is a software that interpret the content of the computer screen, and through a vocal synthesizer, although to read aloud the content of the screen. This content is read by a vocal synthesizer. And with the screen reader, we use the keyboard navigation, not the mouse. We don't use the mouse. And of course, there are a lot of shortcuts that allow navigating through buttons, links, and so on. So through the screen reader, a computer can be really easily used by a visually impaired user.
Yeah, I think it should be, we could maybe expand a little bit on that. So for example, when the screen reader is reading the text, if it's an editable field like a Word document, it's fairly straightforward because anything you can type in, the screen reader can probably read back. Where it gets complicated is reading things like the ribbons and the menu items and tooltips and all these sorts of things, things that normally are only visual and the user doesn't have any ability to impact with it. And there the screen reader can read all that information as well, but only if the software has been developed in a way that exposes all the information about what those buttons and ribbons and commands and tooltips actually say. And that's what the problem is. And so when we talk about making the software accessible, we're really talking about making sure that it's been written in a way that exposes all of this information to the screen reader.
Yeah, exactly.
And you also use a Braille display. So what do you use the Braille display for if you have a screen reader that's reading everything to you?
I use a Braille display mainly to read content such as, for example, documents, because a Braille display is, you can imagine a display, and on this display, everything that is on the screen, is written on the screen, is converted into Braille writing. So, for example, it's very useful. For example, in translation, is very when translating is very useful because users don't have to rely just on the vocal synthesizer, but the content of the document can be read exactly as if you visually read the content and not just listened.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it's called a Braille display, because I imagine if you've never seen one before, you're going to imagine a display like a screen. But actually, a Braille display is not a screen. It's like a keyboard, maybe, with only one line of keys, but the keys are not keys that you press.
Yeah, but there are many, many kinds of Braille display. For example, there are some Braille display that are also note takers, so they have a Braille keyboard has six keys that are the six dots, uh-huh, or eight, because the computer Braille, the Braille writing is composed by six dots, but for computer Braille, the dots became eight. So a Braille keyboard has eight keys, and each key is a dot, and then the space bar and the backspace button, and for each with the combination of dots, it is possible to write letters. So. Yeah, it's not very easy to explain. It would be better to see it, but I hope that I was clear enough.
You were, for me, you were clear enough. And I think the, if anybody's not sure, just type Braille display into Google and look at the images and you'll see. It's a very interesting yeah. device. I know I had a little feel of your Braille display while you were working with it when we were together. And I have no idea how you can actually even feel the difference between the different pins moving up and down, because my fingers must be so numb or something, because I can't even feel the difference between the pins. So I have no idea how you read that.
Yeah, but of course it's like this because you have never learned Braille, yeah. And apart from this, your fingers are not so sensitive to recognize dots. But I'm reading Braille since I was five, so yeah, I'm used to it.